Hey there, I'm Tal Zlotnitsky from Ignite IT Consulting. You know me from the Braving Business podcast, but when I'm not behind the mic, I'm helping tech startups and established companies ignite their full potential. I also help entrepreneurs and businesses in distress reset for success. With over three decades of entrepreneurial success, I bring hands-on experience to drive growth, navigate turnarounds, raise capital, and lead through innovation. Whether it's executive coaching or strategic transformation, I'm here to turn your business challenges into success stories. Visit igniteitconsulting.com and let's spark that change together. That's igniteitconsulting.com. Your journey to business brilliance starts now.
And one last quick thing. If you enjoyed this episode, please stay on after the show to learn more about the Braving Business podcast and other great episodes for you to discover. And now, let's get the show started. Well, hello there.
Hello.
All right. So people who are tuning in, we do not have my normal brother from another mother, my normal partner in crime, Mr. Tal. He is not able to make it today, unfortunately. So our profuse apologies to you, first our audience and as well, Mr. Monty. But we're super happy that you were able to come on board. So how was your weekend?
It was great. Very busy, but great.
Yeah. Whereabouts are you located?
Live in St. George, Utah, southern Utah, just north of Las Vegas, about 100 miles.
Oh, okay. All right. Close enough to get in trouble, but far enough to hopefully keep that trouble at bay.
Well, I try to stay out of trouble. I lived in Vegas for 20 plus years, and I didn't get in trouble then. So
wow.
There's not much chance of that, I don't think.
Your intestinal fortitude to keep your wages is awesome. That's good. Whenever I go there, I always walk away wounded. So I try to stay away, even though it's a great time. It's a great time.
I understand. A lot of people do.
Well, St. George's, Utah sounds beautiful. So I'm glad you had a great weekend. And I'm very excited to have you on. Like I said, unfortunately, Tal cannot be on today, but we've been looking forward to having you on for a while. And so we didn't want to delay this any further. So thank you for allowing just good old, silly old me to talk to you about everything. And hopefully we'll get some great tidbits for people to learn from.
Happy to do it. Excited to do it.
That sounds wonderful. So let's dive into who you are. So folks, today we have Mr. Monty Holm on the podcast. He's come to join our little corner of the interwebs. Monty Holm is an accomplished entrepreneur, a financial advisor, and author with a remarkable journey from humble beginnings to becoming a global leader. He co-founded World Finance Group, WFG, a financial marketing services company that helps families across the U.S. and Canada achieve financial independence. Holm is also the author of Expect to Win, a book that emphasizes the importance of preparing for success by reverse engineering life goals. Well, we'll dig into that for sure. Raised in challenging circumstances, Holm discovered that the financial services industry, or he discovered the financial services industry during his college years, which transformed both his career and personal life. Over the last few decades, he has become a very sought-after motivational speaker, business coach, and mentor to aspiring entrepreneurs. He and his wife, Lisa, have also hosted numerous leadership retreats to guide others in finding balance between faith, family, and professional success. In addition to his many business achievements, Holm has served as a trustee for several charitable organizations and is recognized for his dedication to giving back to his community. His teachings emphasize the importance of strategic planning, strong self-development, and maintaining focus to achieve success in both life and business. Mr. Monty Holm, thank you for joining me on the Braving Business podcast.
Happy to be here. Been looking forward to this since we scheduled it some time back.
Oh, good.
To be helpful in any way I can to these aspiring entrepreneurs out there that may be listening.
Well, you know what? We have plenty of those who listen to this podcast, and I'm sure they're going to glean a lot from you. So this is going to be great. So let's dig into who Monty Holm is and where you're, we know where you are today. Let's go back on the Wayback Machine. You didn't have the easiest start to life. What can you share with our guests about, you know, your past, and what major life lessons did you early experience that imparted on you to shape who you are today?
Well, as I look back on my life, I wouldn't change much, even through the struggles. I've always believed that strength comes from struggle, that, the greatest wisdom actually comes from the greatest challenges often. That's where we learn the most, and it's where we develop our will and our desires and those kind of things. My dad died when I was 14. Mm. It was actually on my 14th birthday. My father passed away of a heart attack. He was 53. And so I struggled through that and became a runaway boy. I ran away a bunch of times and finally settled in St. George. I actually had a friend there, and that friend invited me to stay with him for a few days, which I did. And then I had to go get my own little place. I was 16 and a half years old, and I got a place and began a life. And I had to find a job and start working at a skating rink, and then begged for a job on a construction crew. I became the grunt laborer on a construction crew, and promised the guy who wasn't going to hire me, I promised him I'd be the hardest worker he's ever hired if he'd just give me a shot. And he, after telling me no, when I told him that, he said, "All right, you're hired." And he assigned me to one of his guys, and I went to work. And I was a hod tender. That means carrying the brick and mixing the cement for bricklayers, and then helping bring wood to the carpenters and those kind of people early on. And then I eventually grew to do other things. But that's how I began my life. Wow. And struggled through a lot of ups and downs, tried to save money, had many financial challenges along the way. And I grew out long hair. I actually had hair then, but my hair grew hair over my shoulders and was ridiculed a little bit by past friends from that. And just went through some ups and downs and bumps.
Wow. But
through those, I learned a lot and made some life-changing commitments that sure. blessed me and helped me through my life.
Sure. So, you know, first of all, not to dig too personally, but losing your dad at 14 obviously would have been terrible, especially, I'm assuming it sounded like you were close to him. Or at least that's the sense I got, that you were close to him. Was he fairly healthy, or did this just come out of the blue?
Came out of the blue. I wasn't as close to him. That's probably what hurt so much, is that he was always gone. He traveled so much. He was certainly kind and loved me, and I knew that, but I wanted to be close to him. And of course, that ability to do that ended when he passed away, and that hurt, of course, but I was kind of a troubled youth prior to that anyway, but that's one of the reasons I ran away in those early days. So.
Did that shape or color how you look at taking advantage of opportunities in the future? Like, did it, you know, seeing how such a stark and harsh lesson of losing a parent early on, where you are now saying, "Oh, you know, gosh, I wish I was closer to him. I wish I had said this or made this offer or tried to connect with him in some way." And now that's gone. Did that kind of propel you towards taking advantage of opportunities when they present themselves in the future?
I think it helped me with a resolve to win, to a resolve to go do some things with my life. I was raised, while he was alive, we had a lot of financial challenges. I was shuttled between a farm in Idaho and a place in Arizona back and forth in my youth. But so I was a kind of a grunt laborer for our family too. And that financially we struggled a great deal. And when he died, it only got worse. We lived in an unfinished home with just kind of the 2x4 walls, and the exterior was half finished. The interior was never finished until after he died. The incredible neighborhood came, and a bunch of people came and finished the home we lived in after he died. And so, but I, I, um, I think his passing helped me because he hadn't done much financially in his life and struggled so much. I think that helped me make the decision that I want to go win. I want to be successful in life. I want to live a good life. I want to be a good citizen, a good person, and love and take care of others, but I want to succeed in my financial life. That did help me do that, and it helped me make better decisions longer term. Short term, I probably didn't make the best decisions, but longer term, I think I did.
Well, I mean, you know, clearly with the state of your hair back then, it sounds, no, I'm just kidding.
That's right.
Hey, if you could do it, right? So you have obviously faced a lot of challenges, very significant ones in your journey, and that you've shared in your writings and that you've talked about in your speaking engagements and mentorship. And specifically, you've spoken of, and I quote, having no leadership, no money, and no vision. So what does that phrase actually mean? And what mindset or habits have helped push you through these obstacles early on?
Well, no leadership means I had nobody to look to. I mean, I had no dad, nobody in my life had succeeded. I have running away meant I had no leadership. I had no help to guide me and help structure my life and help me learn how to set goals and even make decisions as to who and what I want to be. I just didn't have that. And I certainly had no money. I mean, my first, even when I met my sweetheart and got married, our entire wedding and honeymoon was $340. Oh. We stayed in Motel Sixes. I mean, it was a pretty sad state of affairs to bring this sweet woman of mine into. But I had no, financially, we were struggling even from the day I ran away from home. We had nothing up through the time we got married and through the first few years of our married life. And no vision. I mean, I had no vision, no clear understanding of really how to pull it off and how to win. And so those struggles caused me to study. They caused me to think hard. They caused me to work hard at my job. But a J-O-B generally stands for Journey of the Broke. That's what most jobs are. And I realized that my jobs, construction and those kind of things, at least for me, they weren't going to take me where I wanted to go.
That is very mindful. That's you being very mindful of the circumstances you're in. Journey of the Broke. I need to write that down. That's a good one. I enjoy that. So you took these lessons, and you've also learned that in the past you said strength comes from struggle. So is there you've shared quite a bit already, which we're very appreciative of. Can you share a specific story from early on in your career where you think that this lesson was crucial, the strength coming from struggle?
Well, I have a lot of them. I mean, I, certainly on farms, I realized as a little boy that with an egg, I watched eggs get hatched, chicken eggs, and you watch that process happen. As a little boy, it seems like it takes forever for that little, you know, the egg starts to move a little bit, and then it moves a little more, and then finally you'll see a little hole from that chick inside pecking. You'll see a little pop on the outside of the shell, and that chick inside there is struggling, and an impatient little boy that decides to help it and breaks the shell for that, well, that chick dives. I mean, it's the struggle that it has to work its way out of that shell that breeds life into it. And I've always known that struggle makes you stronger. If you don't quit, it makes you stronger. I had struggles in my early days. I went to I got in the financial industry and got licensed and moved to Las Vegas. I was now married. I move into Las Vegas and I didn't have any money. And I go approach this big businessman who owned an office building. And I asked him, would you let me rent some space? And I said, I don't have any money and I want to be honest with you, but I want to ask you to mentor me and help me. And I didn't have anybody to mentor me and help me. And I'd gotten my licenses in both insurance and securities. And I was now what they call a registered investment advisor too. I decided that was going to be my career. And I chose that career carefully. I decided in my youth, you know, so many people are told, find something you know you'll like. Well, I didn't care about liking it. I wanted to look at the economics of it and make the decision of something that's going to take care of my family financially. Then I wanted to look at the service component of it. Is it going to serve others and is it going to help others in whatever I do? And the third component is whether or not I like it. And so I mean, liking it doesn't matter as much. I'll learn to love the things I'm successful at.
Sure.
I met this man and I asked him, will you mentor me and help me? And will you lease me an office space? And he said, no. And he chuckled at almost, I mean, it was silly to think that he would give me an office space. And I told him, I'll take one as is, and I promise you I'll pay for it, but I just need you to give me 30 days to cover a check. And I wrote a post-dated check to him. He said, I don't know why I'm doing this, but I think I need to believe in you, young man. And he let me write him an $1,100 check. I'd never made $1,100 in my life. I was brand newly licensed, but I promised him, I said, I promise you I'll cover this. If you'll let me write you a check, let me have the office space. I'll cover it in 30 days and then I'll make that up and we'll. And he said, all right, I'm going to believe in you. And then he slapped his hand down on his desk and he said, now let me tell you something. Let me teach you something. He said, if you can't do this or if tough times come, you increase communication. Most people decrease communication and begin to hide from the people rather than work things out. He said, I want you to stop in every day or two, stick your head in my office. His office was down on the first floor and he gave me a little tiny space, $1,100 a month, up a couple floors from him. And I promised him I'd stop in and I did. And I was able to cover that check by the skin of my teeth, actually. I covered that. And then a year later, I was making big money and things were rocking. And that guy's continued to help me. I will forever be grateful for a man that believed in me in a time that I was struggling most. I had to make between the office rent and the phones and the furniture and the other things that I financed for that first office I ever opened in Las Vegas. It cost me about $3,000 a month to do all that before I could ever bring even a penny home to my family. And so I learned what entrepreneurship is. I learned what trying to be a leader is, that you got to accept that responsibility. And there was a lot of expenses associated with my business. Those challenges caused me to dig in deep. They caused me to get up early in the morning and go to work and do things that I knew I needed to do.
Sure. Sure. Wow. So, you know, you've already in a couple of the stories that you have so kindly shared, there's already a theme that is kind of that's showing through and that I can see. And that theme is that A, don't be afraid to ask people for what you need and what you want. And also don't be afraid to ask people for help. And second thing is you got to believe in yourself and you got to put yourself out there. And, you know, one of the quotes that I tell my kids all the time is you don't get what you don't ask for. And that's been said a billion different ways, but you asking for a job at a construction site, you asking for this workspace from a building owner, it's all about putting yourself out there and having that sense of pride and belief in yourself that, you know what, I am going to make things happen. I'm going to do well. I just need the space and the time, because a lot of times time equals space. I need that space to prove myself. And clearly you've done that. I think that's amazing. I think it's also a great, it's a great lesson for budding entrepreneurs to really kind of understand. We all don't have all of the answers right away, but if you believe in yourself and you put yourself out there, you can achieve some really great things.
You're right. And I will tell you that confidence in what you do is critical. I mean, you have to believe in yourself and you have to believe in what you're doing. You need to be on purpose. I think the thing that helped me though, when I was talking to this sweet Mr. Jenny was his name. When I was talking with him, I had been almost a year prior to that in preparation, getting all my licenses and doing all that. I had written down my goals. I had been to a couple seminars. I had some other entrepreneurs teach me that tell me I ought to go get the book Think and Grow Rich, and I did. And I decided then that I'm going to quantify my goal, clarify and quantify my dreams. Actually, I heard a quote at a seminar that I still don't know where it came from, but those who dream by night in the dusty recesses of their minds, they wake in the day to find that all was vanity. But the dreamers of the day are dangerous men and women, dangerous in a good way, by the way, for they may act out their dreams with open eyes and make them possible. And I had clarified and quantified my dreams. I had turned those dreams into goals, and I had turned those goals into specific plans. And those plans were so clear to me, and I knew I needed an office, and there were certain things I was going to do in that office. And so I did believe in what I was doing, and I believed in myself and my business model and a few people that I'd connected with that were kind of encouraging me to be in the industry. And it changed my life. I mean, that first year was a great struggle, but I look back on it, and I would not have succeeded if I hadn't had the struggles. Mm. And yes, the perseverance to drive through the struggles.
Sure. No, absolutely. And also, you know, even in the example that you gave of asking for the room to work out of, you set a goal for yourself. You put out there a shared goal. Not only is this my goal for Monty Holm, but it's also a goal for the gentleman who gave you that office space, that within a month, this check is going to clear. And that's, I applaud you for that. I think that's great.
Thank you. I never missed a payment to that guy. And by the end of that first year, I'd made, back in those days, the most I'd ever made in a year was $8,000 while I was going to school and getting my licenses and all. But I made almost 50 grand that first year. And the next year I flew by 100 grand like it was standing still. And it continued on because of that commitment and the things that I learned through that period.
Sure. No, that's awesome. So one of the themes that you talked about that's as in business as well as your life is preparation and the expectation to win. And so what does that theme mean? And could you elaborate on how this mentality that you have of being prepared and expecting to win has shaped your approach to entrepreneurship and how our listeners can put it to work for themselves?
Well, I wrote a book about that called Expect to Win, and I don't make any money from that book. The proceeds go to charity. I didn't write it to be famous or to make money. I wrote it out of deep frustration. In fact, in your lifetime, you'll probably never meet anybody who wrote a book out of more frustration than I did. It was just frustration because I'd been dealing with wannabe entrepreneurs. I was working with a bunch of people I was trying to bring into the financial services space. And I began to just fully believe that most people, if you could do a deep dive psychoanalysis on most people, I don't know how to do that, but if you could do it, I convinced myself that most of them, deep down in their psyche, they don't expect to win. Mm. Most people, deep in their psyche, they expect to fail, but they hope to surprise themselves and win. And if they did win, it really would be a surprise to them because they, and I don't blame them. I don't blame us as a whole for that because we're raised in families. I mean, if you look up your family tree, often your family tree, there's not many people that have succeeded at high levels in most of our families. And so we're out there wanting to be entrepreneurs and win. But the expectation to win, it doesn't exist in most. They hope to win, but it would be a surprise to them if they did. And so preparation and building our expectation, I think what happened with me quantifying and clarifying my goals and my dreams and goals and turn those into plans and then reading them out loud every day, morning and night, morning and night, morning and night, no matter what else was happening in my life, that helped me build a belief. Napoleon Hill says that which we persist in placing in our minds will eventually seek reality in our lives. And I, you know, it's all a mindset.
Mm, sure.
And so I had decided I'm going to place in my mind the things that are going to help me be successful. And the things that I the way to do it is by pre-planning it out, writing it down, and then again, reading it out loud. There's something about doing it out loud. That's what I decided to do. And I'm so grateful I did, because it helped me with my confidence. And that confidence in what you're doing just matters. It's everything.
Absolutely. And I was going to say, when you're doing something so often and you are going over it and you're preparing and you're memorizing and you're creating your own mantra, that really does help solidify a base of confidence, because now you know it. And even as for an entrepreneur, as you're saying, they don't really expect to win. They're hoping to win. That focus on your future goals and you laying each brick, it's actually very ironic. You were a bricklayer early on. As you're laying these bricks on your path to your own dreams and to your own success, building that confidence, building that muscle to be able to focus on this every day and to lay out your small victories every day and to do the tweaks that you need to do to pivot if something happens, or to get over a hurdle that comes up out of the blue. All of that builds for you to attain the success that you wish for later on. But then, as you say, you're going to expect it because you've put so much effort towards it. I think that's great.
Yeah, and that's what you're doing. You're building expectations. You're building confidence, not arrogance. There's a big difference between arrogance and cockiness and just confidence. There's such a thing as a humble confidence, where you quietly and humbly know that you're going to win, and you get to where you believe you're supposed to win. And if you're doing the right things consistently, you will. You can't consistently do the wrong things and expect to win.
Yeah.
But I'm convinced that you can't consistently do the right things and fail. And so learning to do the right things and doing them consistently and developing patterns and habits, developing habits of doing what most people won't do, it makes you a rare person. Anything that's rare is worth more. Rare coins, rare cars, rare people. And if rare people are those who develop habits of doing what most simply will not do.
Yeah, you're really making me now think of all kinds of sports metaphors. But I mean, like, I think that, you know, when you, like, a lot of times you see athletes who are like, many are blessed with physical gifts that I could never truly appreciate myself, because I just don't have those gifts. But many athletes out there have phenomenal gifts. And there are also many athletes out there that just work their tails off and they practice all the time. And you always hear of these really elite athletes who don't practice or don't want to practice. They think that, you know what, I got this in the bag. I've done this 100 times. I don't need to do this again. And then you have really elite people like a Michael Jordan or someone of that ilk who they practice just as hard or even harder than everyone else on the team. And they bring that mentality, that confidence, maybe a little arrogance with Michael Jordan, but you know, you bring that confidence to the court when it counts. And that's, I think everything you're saying makes absolute perfect sense. And it's again, building those blocks towards your path of the future. You've also talked in the past about near perfect execution, and that seems like something that, of course, like a lot of people aspire to, but struggle with, right? Executing can be difficult. So is there a clearer path to improve execution that entrepreneurs are looking to improve, that their execution can follow? Do you have like a, you know, execution by numbers kind of thing, or like any kind of suggestion for that?
Well, a lot of people don't really have, I mean, it's like, if you have a business model and a strategy and a plan that is exactly how, like, for example, I started my business knowing that my first year, by the end of my first 12 months, I wanted to make $10,000 in 1 month by the end of that first year. And I did some reverse engineering, and I love reverse engineering. I mean, I just love that concept that you start with the end in mind. You figure out what you want to come out. It's like a pipeline. In fact, in my book, I speak about a pipeline that you figure out what you want out of the end of the pipeline, out of the outflow end, and then you'd reverse engineer and figure out what you've got to do on the front end to put the pressure and the flow to get that amount out of the back end. And I think you do that with your life and your business processes, and that's reverse engineering. And so I think if somebody has a reverse engineered plan, like I did, even for that 10 grand in a month, I figured out how many people I need to contact, how many sales I need, how many presentations I need to make, how many sales, and exactly to the penny based on the average of what I was going to make per sale. I knew exactly what I needed to do. That was just mathematics. But I had reverse engineered it. I wanted 10 grand out of that pipeline, my business pipeline. I've got 7 pipelines I use for myself, different pipelines. I have a spiritual pipeline. I have a family deal. I have a business deal. I just have these examples I use that, because we get to determine what comes out of our lives. I mean, we absolutely can determine what our lives look like. And my favorite pipeline that I use is my life pipeline. And the life pipeline, I reverse engineered that, where I decided years ago that what I believe is most people out of their life pipeline, they want happiness, peace, and prosperity gushing out of that pipeline. Mm. That's what they'd love to have. But you can't go focus on the pipeline and say, okay, give me happiness, peace, and prosperity. Then you reverse engineer that and say, where does that come from? Because those are byproducts of something. Mm-hmm. What's happiness and peace and prosperity a byproduct of? And for me, I back those up. That's what my book's about. You back it up. And I decided it comes from self-respect. I mean, I'm not going to be happy and I'm not going to have peace if I don't like me. And if I don't really honestly like myself, and if I don't have what I like to call self-respect, which is coupled with self-confidence and self-worth and self-esteem and those things. But then I decide, well, I figured those are byproducts of something. Mm-hmm. How do I get myself to like me? And so I had to back it up again and figure out, well, the key to that is discipline. It's self-discipline. If I get myself to do the things I know I should, I like myself better than when I do things I know I shouldn't. And so it's all based on if I'm able to simply discipline myself to do what I know I should and not do what I know I shouldn't, my self-respect and my self-confidence, my self-worth, my self-esteem, those things are going to all skyrocket, and I'm going to have self-respect, which is going to flow into happiness and peace, and prosperity can flow too. But self-discipline's a byproduct of something. So it was just a gyration I was going through in my life to figure that out. And that's why I wrote a book about it, because self-discipline comes from desire. Most of us grit our teeth and say, I'm going to discipline myself, man. I'm going to, mm-hmm. and discipline though, if we could take the focus off the discipline and put it on desire, because if you want something bad enough, you'll do whatever you got to do to do it. I mean, discipline becomes an automatic byproduct of properly fueled desire. And desire is a byproduct of something. So I backed all that up and figured out what I got to do on the front end. And on the very front end, if I'm doing those things, that stuff just gushes through my life pipeline, and it builds me a better life that has peace and prosperity and happiness just gushing out. I don't just want a little drip system where it's dripping out of the end, or a periodic squirt system where it's just periodically squirting out.
Yep.
I want a gusher with my life. And that includes not just business. That's faith. That's family. That's things that are more important than money. So I didn't mean to get on a rant there.
Oh my gosh. No, first of all, I love the intentionality of all this. I love the focus. I love the stepping back and taking a holistic view of everything. I also love the self-criticism and kind of stripping everything down and saying, where do I want to be? What's going to make me happy? Why does it make me happy? Why do I want this? And then building everything back up to there. And I think that's, it's very philosophical. And I think I just think it's super smart, right? I think that it really easily attends to why you've been successful and where you're at, because you're attacking everything with real intentionality. And it's not so much about, you know, you've come up with the best widget that's out there. It's not about you building a better mousetrap. It's about sitting back and taking a moment to really realize what your goals are and where you want to be and what you want to do and what's important to you. And then, like you say, reverse engineering all that back to say, where can I get to that's going to allow me to, okay, I'm set in this spot and now I'm ready to move forward to that goal and I'm going to do it through these steps, and now I'm going to lay some bricks and move forward that way. I just love it. I think that's great.
Well, thank you. A predetermined outcome. I mean, planning what kind of life you want to have. I mean, you're right. It's not a better widget. It's not, I mean, it's you figuring out who and what you want to be, but, and having a predetermined outcome. Most of us don't. That's more proof that we don't expect to win. Everything we do, we should have a predetermined outcome.
When you say win, what does that mean to you?
To win means we get what we predetermined gushing out of that pipeline, whichever pipeline it is. That means we're winning. In my book, Expect to Win, most of us don't really, again, we don't expect to win, but we don't prepare ourselves. Those who truly expect to win, they plan to win and they prepare themselves to win in everything they do. Mm-hmm. Winning in business, winning in their family, winning in their spiritual life, winning, yes, even in sports. I mean, those things. I mean, I think Michael Jordan and those guys, I would say those guys, their drive, their determination, their desire is what fueled their discipline. And that discipline fueled their confidence, et cetera. It's the same thing. Those who expect to win, somehow it boils down to the first part of that, the entry part of that pipeline, not the end of it. It's the early part. They were able to see the vision of it, and they were able to develop the plan for it. And then absolutely, they were able to then get it to where it's so crystallized in their mind as to who and what they want to be, that the discipline piece of it becomes an automatic form.
Sure. I think it's really, this is fascinating. And the reason why I say that is because a lot of times I think entrepreneurs, they come up with the better mousetrap. God bless them. They figured out the right thing that society needs that's going to solve ills and whatever that product or that service is, that's great. But I don't think they do enough, or not that I don't think they do enough, but I think a lot of trip ups for entrepreneurs is all of the self-actualization and the self-determination and that work that they need to do on themselves to understand that that product, that widget, that better mousetrap is merely the vehicle to get them to what their dreams actually are. And I think your process, your thought of taking a step back to really looking at everything holistically, reverse engineering everything back, makes a ton of sense. Because if you don't know where you're going, you can't build how to get there. And I think that's just, it's not like groundbreaking. This isn't necessarily rocket science, but it is something that people don't pay enough attention to. And I'm really glad that you're bringing that to light.
Thank you. I think most entrepreneurs are well-meaning and,
of course,
gosh, they're just smart. I mean, they come up with these incredible widgets and ideas, but self-development is the key to that. Those three things, at least two of the three that I want gushing out of my life pipeline, which is happiness and peace. I mean, I want to like myself. I want to have confidence in myself. I don't want to be arrogant or cocky in any way, but I want to be, have peace and joy in my life. And yes, I want prosperity too, because prosperity means the money. That's the money piece of it that allows you to go do those things. But self-development means that we're developing ourselves in many ways, more so than just the widget. I mean, we came up with a business plan and an idea. We called it a business hybrid, and we felt like we had a better way of building a business, and we built a monster business across these United States and Canada, but it wasn't the widget. The focus has always been on developing ourselves. Even all across our company, we want to build leaders. And if you're building leaders, then those leaders are loving people, caring for people, the approach that we're going to do what's right all the time. And I don't know that we always have and always do, but certainly the goal is to do what's right. I had a friend tell me once that his dad, when he was a little boy, his dad used to tell him, if you love people and use money, you're going to have a more happy life. But if you love money and use people, you're going to have a miserable life. And so, and today he's, I don't know what his business makes, but it's probably over $500 million a year. I mean, he's a big, big player in the world today because he does that. And everybody around him, and I know him well, everybody around him knows that he loves people and uses money. He doesn't love money and use people. And so if you're working on you, if it's about self-development, then you're trying to grow to where you're your people component, where you, your human, I mean, I've always believed all success boils down to human relations.
Absolutely.
Just the way you interact with other people and your personal disciplines and your time management and your, how you develop your skill sets and all that, that's all working on you. And the best entrepreneurs, the best CEOs are those who have worked on themselves and constantly continue to work on themselves. From their mindset to their skills to all those other things we just mentioned, they get good at those things, or at least okay at them. Some areas we excel here and struggle here, and I mean, there's some of that, but it's working on ourselves. One other quick point: I had a guy in my earliest days, a guy that became a mentor later after that Las Vegas office owner. The next mentor in my life was a guy that used to say to me, and he always seemed like he was frustrated with me early on, but he used to say, "Monty Holm, you better do something about you." And then there'd be a pregnant pause and he'd say, "For no one else can." Hmm. And I'd go say, "Man, what have I got to do about me?" And it had helped me drive further into these things I must do about me. And I ended up today, I appreciate it more than I can tell you, because all of us, and I would say that to all of you entrepreneurs that may be listening today, hey, you better do something about you, for no one else can. And the people around us need this. It's how they feel around us. It's the vision that's expanded in the things they hear and the things they see when they're in your presence, that will make you the best leader, the most impactful leader.
Monty, you almost have me to a point where I'm ready to, you know, take off the headphones and just start working on me immediately. Like that's, that's great stuff. But you know what? I also know that I have limitations. I have my own limitations. A lot of times they come from, managing expectations, not only for myself, but for those around me and for clients and all that other kind of stuff. And I know that you had mentioned how important managing expectations are. You've also mentioned that you got to have a laser focus, and that's really 98% of what you term as winning. A lot of entrepreneurs, I think may not have really defined this focus very well, or as well as they could. So how can they develop this focus, especially when there are distractions literally everywhere?
Well, I'm so glad you asked that. And I think it's all part of one great whole. I think when we decide who and what we want to be, when we figured out, for example, the pipeline, to go back to that, when we figure out what we want gushing out of our pipeline, and we do that reverse engineering, and we now get down to where we've got our goals, our dreams and our goals turned into plans. And those plans, if we're reading our plans out loud every day, it, and those plans include, those goals and plans include whatever we want to be good at. I mean, for me, I've always had four words that may mean every, I want my entire life to be centered around four words. And so it's easy for me to be focused on those four things because they're written in my goals. They have been for 40 years.
Wow.
PJ, for 40 years, I've planned every year. I've pre-planned the year before the year comes. I won't let January 1st come without having that next year pre-planned out in these four areas. It's faith, family, finance, and fitness. I have those things planned out, and I'm not perfect in them. But I've mastered the ability to not get myself to let a new year come in without knowing what I want to do that year in those four areas. And so that laser beam focus comes from, I mean, it takes discipline in this crazy world. I mean, there's so much going on in the political landscape and in the world affairs and the news and social media and our families and our business. And there's some, but to spend 3 to 5 minutes, most of us can't get ourselves for 3 to 5 minutes a day. This just shocks me.
Yeah.
And it frustrates me that we can't pre-plan it out and then read it out loud for 3 to 5 minutes in the morning. I mean, it changes your life. It changes what you think about. That which we persist in placing in our minds, it really does seek reality in our lives. And especially when some emotion went into pre-planning it, and most of us don't pre-plan. We just don't. We mamby-pamby through life, hoping things will work out, and generally they'll work out. But I don't think we are doing as much as we could do in terms of impacting those around us and even ourselves. I mean, I don't think we ought to do it. For me, I don't want to do it for personal glory or aggrandizement or for wealth or display or any of that. I want to do it for those things that I mentioned. I want the peace and the happiness. And yes, I want the prosperity connected with that that'll flow. But I don't care what people think of me much. I mean, I don't think life's a popularity contest. Doesn't matter what others say or think or do. What matters is what I do, that I need to be the best I can be.
Sure.
But I've got to work on me, and I've got to be clear. I've got to be laser beam focused on those things that I want to do and be in order to get the best results.
All right. Well, you've been putting me to shame. I think that's no, I'm just kidding. But you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I am soaking all this in because I easily can see areas where I need to fine tune some things to make my future better. And so I'm very thankful for this entire conversation, and I'm sure that many others are as well. One of the things that you've also mentioned that you're very passionate about is helping people win the money game. And I would love that, because basically every time I try to play the money game, it becomes forfeit. So what are some of the common mistakes that you've seen that people make when it comes to financial success, and how can they avoid those?
Well, I mean, most people are losing the money game. You just look at how, I mean, you've got to make some money to be able to win the game, but it's all connected again to a greater whole. For me, I decided when I got into this into the industry I'm in, the financial services industry, I decided that I want to be financially dependent. And just to think about that, and I would encourage everybody to at least have the desire to be financially independent. Whether that means, you define what that means to you. All of us should do that. But to me, financially dependent simply means that I have a substantial income that would continue regardless of what I personally do. Because you're not financially dependent unless you have an income at your desired level, unless you have an income that would continue regardless of what you personally do. And so to me, I decided that there's two ways to do that, two ways to become financially secure. One is to build a business that throws off an income to me. But two is to grow a pile of money. In other words, get good enough at saving money that I grow a pile of money. Because when you get money stashed and saved, money makes money, and the money money makes makes more money. And so money is not like people. It doesn't eat or sleep or go to the bathroom. It doesn't take breaks. It works 24/7. And if money is properly deployed in any setting, whether you're a businessman or just a personal family or whatever, to have money properly deployed in places that are safe and secure, but yet give good returns. So eventually your money can out-earn you. If you have a pile of money, $1 million at 10% would give you $100,000 a year. And so having a goal of accumulating money is part of becoming financially secure. And so for me, I've always wanted to help people, encourage them strongly to live on a budget. I want to encourage them to set aside. For me, I decided the largest payment I will ever make. This was right my second year of marriage when I told my sweetheart, the biggest payment we will ever make in our lives is to our future. And so we set up mutual funds, equity-based mutual funds that we put a payment in. And it was always, we decided it's always going to be bigger than even before we could afford to do this. It was just the mindset. It was going to be bigger than our mortgage payment, bigger than any other payment in our lives. And we've consistently, you know, we'd go buy something, we'd decide on what the payment's going to be. We'd both gulp and say, that means our payment in our mutual funds has got to be this. And we've lived by that. And it's amazing how those funds, when you consistently throw those funds, whether it's 10% or 20% of your income or whatever it is, you force it out. And it's a struggle. I mean, making money in your family is a struggle. The people that want it out there, I mean, there's always going to be a big line of people that are businesses that want your money, from your mortgage to your utilities to all that stuff. But to peel off some of that, I've always envisioned my wife and my kids at the front of the line, in front of all those other mortgages and all those other folks, and they're going to get the biggest percentage of my income, and it's going to be stashed. And as it grows, as it's back over here growing and you're adding to it, your biggest temptation is to pull it and go do something fun, or to pull it and go relieve some pressure, meaning debt or other things. But I don't care what's happening. I'm going to continue to stash some over there, and I'm going to continue to struggle with bringing it in. And over time, though, eventually this one gets so big that it's actually out-earning you, and it can get big enough that it makes your family financially dependent. But having a plan with actual numbers that fit you and your family and what you're doing matter. I think everybody's going to be different. I mean, I had little goals initially, but they got bigger and bigger over time, and that stuff grows.
I do. And it should grow. It should grow. Absolutely. And I love the fact that, you know, not only are you setting goals, like I mentioned before, when you wrote the check to Mr. Jenny, you know, that is a goal that you have to attain, because now you're forcing yourself to meet that goal. And just like you're saying with how much you're going to squirrel away for your family, because that's your most important goal, you are forcing yourself to save for them. And I think that is a mindset switch where it's, again, kind of like reverse engineering. A lot of people are like, I need to make enough money to satisfy all of my debts and all of what's needed. And then after that, I'm going to try to save some. And you are starting out, nope, I'm going to save some first, and then everything else I'm going to just figure out through struggle. And I think that is why you've been successful, because you've kind of forced yourself down this path. And as we know with pipelines, force helps things flow better. Well, hopefully. Yeah. I'm not a plumber, so don't quote me on that. But hopefully it helps you. So how do you personally stay motivated and focused as you start working on new goals? And what advice would you give to entrepreneurs about burnout? Like, have you been burnt out? And how do you think someone who's starting out can avoid feeling burnt out?
Well, great question. And again, thank you. I hope this is helping somebody out there in the world.
I guarantee you it is.
I would just tell you that burnout comes from not having the next big vision of who and what you want to be. For me, I've never really suffered from burnout because I don't let the new year come without having the next year pre-planned. And the next year is pre-planned with specificity so that I know what the big goals are. I mean, I know what trips I want to take that year. It takes some time. It takes some serious thinking to pre-plan a year of I want to take my family. I mean, for example, we decided years ago that we're going to have every quarter we're going to do something. Every week I'm going to take my wife on a date, but every month I'm going to take her on a overnight or somewhere and go do something fun. But every quarter we're going to go do something a little bigger. And same with our kids and now our grandkids. We live on this farm with all of our kids building around us right now. I mean, there's construction going on outside right now, and we're in our new home. But this farm, somebody asked me the other day, what's your crop? Are you a farmer? What's your crop? I said, grandkids. So that's my new crop. But anyway, to pre-plan trips and fun things every quarter, something a little bigger every year, much bigger. One of the four quarters is going to be a bigger trip or something really fun. We just got back from Cabo last week. So we go do some fun things regularly, and we build those into those plans. But if you're starting a year with a vision of that year, of what you're going to do, and it's got the fun built into it, it's got the business component. For me, it's faith, family, finance, and fitness. And the fun, those are all F words, by the way. F words are, they're my favorite words. There's also some despicable F words, but there's some great F words. And I can, fun is another good word. And the fun is built into all of them with the trips and the fun things with our family. But you don't get burned out if you plan that stuff out. You don't get burned out if you have some fun things planned with your family and with your, even from a business standpoint. PJ, just real quick, speaking of F words, let me finish a thought. I hadn't thought of this earlier, but I want to say it to you. That my favorite F words are faith, which ought to be the foundation, at least for my life, family, fidelity, financial frugality, and fitness. The key to fitness is the food we eat. How much? What it is and how much of it, and that can turn into fun. And then there's an overarching some words that if we do those right, if we do faith, family, finance, and fitness right, then we have some other words like fortune. We can build a fortune and have good fortune. And freedom. Freedom's my favorite F word because it builds financial freedom. It builds freedom from debt, freedom from pain, freedom from issues because we're doing things the way we should. And all that's just, we ought to predetermine that stuff. Most of this is just a choice, and we get to plan it out. Our lives can look like they can look like we would dream of them looking like. But it's not going to happen without some pre-planning, and it's not going to happen without us putting some effort in. I mean, it's like plans for a house. This house I'm in right now, my wife and I may have the plans created for. It's always amazed me how a house resembles the plans for that house, and it's always pretty darn close. And our lives can look like the plans for our lives, but a lot of us don't really put our full plans together. They're not detailed plans like we would for a house, like we would for other things. So I would hope we would do that. And for everybody listening, please take the time to just reverse engineer, pre-plan stuff, read it out loud every day, It'll fix the burnout. It'll fix the drive and determination. It'll help you through adversity. It'll help you expect to win.
That's awesome. That really is awesome. And so we're getting on. Last question is, when you're looking ahead and you see what's coming up on the horizon, what's the next big challenge or project that you're excited to tackle, and how do you plan to approach it with your expect to win mentality?
Well, for me, I'm so grateful, but I've been financially independent for decades, many decades, and I'm grateful for the opportunities I've had, and yes, some of the luck and all that stuff too, and even the adversity. I'm grateful for that. But for me personally, the best thing I can do as I look into the future is try to help the next generation. And so I am, you know, I'm coaching some other business leaders that I love to do here locally and nationally. I'm doing some of that. I love to help others that want to win. My grandkids, every other Monday night at 6:30, our grandkids, we gather, and I want to influence them. I want to talk to them about making and keeping promises. We are teaching them these things, being good stewards of their lives and making good choices. And essentially, there's my book, Expect to Win. I'm trying to teach them principles out of our book and out of just from life and even the struggles, how to thrive through struggle, how to thrive through it, because they're all going to face adversity and struggle. So I think the best thing for me, the next big challenge, is to try to help shape the mentality and the outcome for the next generation, starting with my kids and grandkids, and then extending to others who I can influence and help.
That is wonderful. Monty, if people want to get a hold of you, if they want to subscribe to any of your potential coaching lessons, if they want to subscribe to anything that you have coming out for regular content, they want to buy your book, where do people reach you?
Well, they can buy the book on Amazon. And again, I don't make money. I don't promote that book. I mean, we've sold tens of thousands of copies of that book, and it continues to. But they can get that from Amazon, or they can go to Monty Holm, MontyHolm.com, MontyHolm.com, and they can contact us that way or through my staff. But and I'm not trying to promote any of those. I want to help and want people to win.
Oh, well, the next book you write, you already have the title, F Words. So I think that, I can't wait to see whatever else you have coming out. And, your work is so important. I just love the altruistic way that you approach everything. And if everyone was as giving, I think you're early on, you know, having a house that wasn't finished and people coming together and helping you finish that house and create that foundation of you or for you inside of you. Obviously you're returning the favor now. And I think that's wonderful. So everyone can use a helping hand and everyone, can always help each other out. And I think it's important for society as well. So,
well, thank you, PJ. Great to meet you and to get to know you. I've listened to you and Tal, you guys are doing a great job. Thank you for your work and your effort. You're making a big difference in this world. So keep it up.
Well, not as big of a difference as you are. Folks, today we've had Monty Holm, financial services guru, self-made man, motivational speaker, and a guy who really knows how to expect to win. Plan out your future, get your blueprint for your future built, and you can enjoy that future house. Thank you so much, Monty. Thank you for being a part of their show.
Thank you, PJ. Enjoyed being with you.
And that's a wrap, folks. Like what you heard, want to support the show? Please follow our page on LinkedIn and Facebook. Visit us on YouTube, and please like and rate us on all of your favorite podcast streaming services. You can also see exclusive content, subscribe for free to our weekly blog, support our sponsors, and soon buy our merchandise at www.bravingbusiness.com. Thanks for being a part of our production, and we'll see you next time on the Braving Business Podcast.